Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of the wise and inspirational Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together, we, the Brieflies, keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events, laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Let me introduce the Brieflies and our guests. Engineering the show from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon is our intrepid treetop flyer, Truman O'Brien.
Hey.
Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. It's great to be here with the whole crew's here today. Wow.
That's right.
Just chiming in.
Live and in person. This is great. This is fun.
Here, also in studio today, is our political conscience and thoughtful motivator, Kevin Jones.
A rare in-studio presence. Good to be here.
That's right. Before you fly away or...
depart over the waves.
Float away to see the world. Yeah. Also joining us is Vachon's own historian, Bruce Holman, a wicked good storyteller, critical context provider, and sailor of the seized boot. Good morning, Bruce.
Hey, good morning. Good to be here. Is that a wicked storyteller or a teller of wicked,
wicked stories?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure that
probably
one out.
Probably a little of both.
I hope both.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for, is both.
He's very dexterous.
Right. Yeah. Story dexterous.
Story dexterous.
Story dexterous. I love it.
And of course, in our studio is distinguished legalista Craig Bellis, who's undoubtedly had quite a week.
Ooh.
Yeah, hello, Craig.
How you doing? And it's great to be here. And Amy, we're all behind you. And you're this is your first hosting show as a permanent Briefly.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
shout out to Amy.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, thanks. I know I'm flying alone here, but with the wind beneath my wings.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Joining the Brieflies today is Jennifer Hawk of the legendary Bearded Lady Road Report. Hawk isn't just an intrepid traveler of snowy streets, but also a prolific artist, queer icon, and elder, and Vachon Jim. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I am Amy Dreyer, oft-times tilter at windmills. Today's are shaped as ferry boats, and I am a dyed-in-the-wool Vachonophile, another word that the Brieflies have made up.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Yes, in our lexicon. All right, so as we do each show, let's take a moment to check in with everyone about what special things you experienced this past week. And we will go ahead and start with Kevin.
Could I tell a Thursday story? I think we're going to get into this topic, but a Thursday story. So my friend Stephen Cox, who's been on the Brieflies, by the way, he is with the Washington State Indivisible podcast, WSIP. And if you go look WSIP on SoundCloud, keep that in mind because that's going to come up. So we record a monthly podcast on elections on Thursdays at 2 o'clock. And we get together at 2 on Tuesdays to kind of get the script put together. So as we were doing that, I was like, well, you know, we have a trial going on. I wonder, you know, what maybe, you know, should we talk about it? And it was, well, we talk, you know, yeah, no, maybe so. So anyway, we didn't really come to a conclusion. So it's about 1:30 on Thursday, and I'm sitting on the couch eating lunch, watching the television. And the jury, of course, is about to be dismissed. And then it's like, oh, wait a minute. No, the jury's not dismissed. So we have a verdict. So I text Stefan, say, hey, we have a verdict. And he says, shall we wait to record? Also, holy smokes. And he didn't. It wasn't smokes, you know. So I said, I have to wrap by 2:50 to make a 3:30 in town. But that said, I'll be able to be back by 6. We could record then. He says, well, maybe we should start at 2:15. I said, yeah, sure. What the heck? So his prediction, he says, they only deliberated for a few hours. So my guess is a conviction on all counts. My reply. That squares with my logic, so holy smokes! We literally, as we were getting on the Zoom to do the podcast, the guilty counts were coming in.
Oh, my God.
So,
oh,
so if you want to hear the first words out of my mouth after we heard the 34, go to WSIP on SoundCloud, do a little bit of search, and you'll find the latest from the Washington State Invisible Podcast. And shout out to our friend Stefan.
Those first words aren't the prohibited words, are they?
They're not. No, no, I could have said it. But.
Okay.
We might later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, not to be too much in the same vein, but Craig, how about your week pass?
That is the same vein.
Uh-huh.
I basically have spent the week answering people's questions and making up answers.
About, like any good lawyer will do.
Well, educated guesses, let's put it that way. A lot of discussion, obviously, about the case and the sentencing and what lies ahead and arguments that I've heard on the other side. Arguments as being charitable. So I'll leave it at that.
good planning.
Good, very good. All right. And Bruce, how about you?
Oh, been a busy week. We actually sent off all the museum exhibits to the printer for the opening coming up with July 5th. So it was kind of like, it's like when you're getting a book ready, galley's ready to go to print. It's sort of like you're finding every undotted I and every period there's a comma. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like, oh, God, it drives you crazy. But it's off to the printer. So it is what it is.
It is. And, you know, the old writer's adadage, what's the best way to find a typo? Publish a book.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So many proofreaders at that point.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And yes.
Did you read the proof backwards? That's what we used to do with the law reviews. You'd read them backwards and pick things up you wouldn't.
Yep. Yeah, that's an old trick for editing. Yeah. You start at the bottom and you read backwards and up. And it's amazing what you see, because your mind fills in what it thinks is there, not what is actually there. Mm-hmm. When you're reading backwards, you're having to sort of, you're actually seeing what's there. And it's amazing what jumps off the page that you didn't catch the first time.
Just to look at the things you learn by listening to the Briefly's. You know, I mean, come on. That's
right. We'll be reading backwards from now on.
Right. Exactly. No more typos ever.
I love it.
Ever.
I love
how about you, Truman?
Well, I'm going to go the other way. I went into town on Tuesday and went to see a performance of the Tedeschi Trucks Band at the Paramount. Ooh. And had dinner at Ruth Chris Steakhouse beforehand, which was really nice. And, you know, I have to tell you, though, I was surprised. I was expecting the big bill, you know. And this past couple of years, I've had some really expensive meals. And this one wasn't too bad. But, boy, it was right up there. Quality-wise, really good. But I have to tell you, I was a little bit disappointed in the concert. I really was.
Oh,
maybe,
shocking.
Maybe I'm getting too old. I don't know. But the first half was so loud and so bright with the lights in the eyes. I mean, oh, my gosh. And, you know, honestly, it was, you know, they had a lot of fuzz guitar going. You couldn't even hear the melody. I mean, it was just, you know.
You need hearing aids that, you know, you can
turn down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I really was wishing I had an earplug. Mm-hmm. Second half of the concert was excellent.
By the time you were deafened sufficiently.
Well, maybe that's what it was. You know, maybe I was just dull to the point. But, yeah, the second half was, you know, some great melodies. And, yeah, so I really enjoyed that. But the first half, I was very disappointed.
And your ears stopped ringing after how many hours?
Days, not hours, okay, days. Go, days. Yeah, they're still ringing. But anyway, it was fun. So there you go.
Excellent, excellent. And how about you, Ms. Hawk? Anything fun happened in the last week or so?
My favorite thing that's happening in the last week or so is watching all my seed starts come up. This weather has been so perfect. Mm. And this is the first time that I've started so much of my garden from seed. Mm. So, yeah, I'm in a home where I'm allowed to cut into beds, and it's the first time I've laid down my own beds, laid down my own seeds, and I went hog wild this year, and I'm excited to see everything coming up. So
you went hawk wild.
Hawk wild.
There it is. Ouch. Come on. This is the entertainment you came for.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was very excited. We had a really good fairy week. Couple good developments. But one that I'm so excited to share is that we have made a true love connection with the Fairy Lovers of Washington, which is kind of our Islanders for Fairy equivalent up in the San Juans. And we are had a conversation with their steering committee this past week, and they are just as excited as we are to team up and do some collaborative action. And of course, that's been kind of one of our big goals with the ferry work, is to, you know, unite our regional ferry dependent communities.
Right.
So that was a really, really good breakthrough that I was excited, so excited to talk with them up there. And the kind of the human interest story is writing itself. Their steering committee has a guy, Tom Starr, on their committee, who is, if it sounds familiar, a veteran of newsrooms and PR. Mm. That might sound like our beloved Rick Wallace that we all know. So I'm, you know, going to try to make as much hay over having a counterpart for Rick in the San Juans as I can.
Nice.
Yeah.
I know you have a timely cap on. Are those generally available? It says Fix Our Ferries. It has a nice logo on it.
Indeed. You might have seen buttons wandering around town with our circular Fix Our Ferries logo with our Islanders for Ferry Action. And I do have it is a one-off trucker hat, but I've had a couple people ask. So, yes, you can email me. What's the easiest way? Probably if you go to fixourferries.org. My email is there and I can connect you. It is a fabulous trucker hat, if I do say so myself. So I think we might try to have more stuff available for festival too.
So my marine, ferries are marine highways button would go great on that hat, I just have to say.
Ooh.
But the question that I had was, where are the ferry lovers of Washington located in the San Juan Islands?
The ferry lovers are, they're on different islands, but I know, I think Jeff is in Friday Harbor.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty sure Jeff's out of Friday Harbor.
Jeff in Friday Harbor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have to ask around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we had a great week, but today is June 4th, and it is a significant day, as are all days. So we are 45 days until the start of Strawberry Festival on July 19th. And our new Chamber of Commerce Executive Director, Alexis Gears, is at the helm and whipping up a fabulous festival for us. We are 30 days until the Heritage Museum reopens on July 4th. Also with new Executive Director Greta Stimson welcoming everyone to celebrate. Today, in 1919, the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which, quote-unquote, gave women the right to vote, was passed by the Senate 2 weeks after being approved by the House, and the amendment was ratified the following year. Also, 1972, Angela Davis, black activist and professor at UC California, LA, UCLA, go Bruins, was acquitted on charges of conspiracy, murder, and kidnapping by a jury in San Jose, California. Mr. Bellis, legalista.
Well, it's not the legalist, the legal part of that comment. It's the fact that I am not a Bruin. I am a dyed-in-the-wool banana slug. Having graduated from the University of California, Santa Cruz. And I just wanted to point out, Angela Davis was at UCLA for 1 year, fired twice in that year. But then in 1991, she became a professor at University of California at Santa Cruz from 91 to 98. And from 98 until present, she's the Distinguished Professor Emerita in History of Consciousness and Feminist Studies at UC Santa Cruz.
Congratulations to your alma mater.
It's a little interesting side note here. Two schools were formed in the 1960s as alternative kind of universities in major university systems. One was UC Santa Cruz. The other was Evergreen State College in Olympia. And the banana slugs are the mascot for UC Santa Cruz. Guess what is the mascot for Evergreen State College?
The Gooey Ducks.
The Gooey Ducks.
Fantastic.
So
fantastic.
Definitely alternative 60s.
Bless the hippies.
Sure.
Bless
them.
Wow. Yeah, awesome. Kevin.
I'm glad that our legal expert and our historian are teaming up on this history lesson
right.
for us today.
Harmonized.
We're all working together here.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And I cannot mention the Bruins without saying fight on, USC. All right. And June 4th, finally. Oh, no, wait. We have two more awesome things about June 4th. It is Audacity to Hope Day, which is a brave and subversive act in our modern world, I think. Mm. And finally, it is National Cheese Day, right? So shouting out Aaron, my wife Aaron, get some Manchego, get some Cambo. Roll on. It is time. It is your official your day, babe. All right. Nice. All right. So let's get down to it. The reason for the season and why we're here today. Jennifer Hawk, welcome. And thank you for joining the Brieflys on Voice of Vashon. I'm so thrilled you could join us today. Not only is this the first Briefly I've hosted, it's the start of Pride Month, and I couldn't think of anyone I'd rather kick all these things off with than you today. So welcome.
So glad to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. All right. You are, of course, the bearded lady of the eponymous Bearded Lady Road Report, a combination of comedians in cars and real-time road reports on snowy days, which listeners can find on Facebook. You're also an artist and engaged community member. So let's start at the very beginning, at least where Vashon is concerned, which is where all things begin. Where did you call home before Vashon? How'd you make it to our little island? And most importantly, why did you stay?
I always love asking this question of other people. I'm happy to tell my story. I grew up in Montana.
I need to know where.
I'm sorry, what?
Where?
In Billings.
Oh, okay, because I'm from Miles City. That's what
I was. Oh, hey. Yeah. Right on. I've got a bunch of friends from Miles City.
There you go.
Awesome.
I just had to ask
there
that.
There are other people.
Yeah, there are other people.
There are other people.
Okay, well, I'll let that go.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just had to know.
Yeah, that's always fun to make a connection.
Yeah.
I grew up in Montana. I was a late bloomer. I didn't leave until I was about 34 years old. I'd kind of milked that town for everything I could. I got my degree in arts in cast metals and painting from Montana State University. Went on to help my folks run a large antique mall. We had the biggest antique mall in the state of Montana. Mm-hmm. And then did 3.5 years as a curatorial assistant at a contemporary arts museum. Mm-hmm. And my artwork was doing great. I had 3 galleries carrying my work. I kind of expanded to my borders at that point. And I needed to see new things. I needed new experiences. At the time, Montana still had homosexuality listed on its books with bestiality. It was punishable by a fine and time in jail, and that kind of puts an umbrella on the entire culture. So friends of mine had been going, you know, you got to get out of there, you got to expand your horizons. So I went to Portland, Oregon, had my mind blown. And also learned that I'm not a big city kid. The queer experience was great. The art experience was great. But that's a lot of wet cement. That's a lot of bars on windows. I'm a country mouse. I do not have city kid sensibilities. So I've been a part of a ceremonial group for the last 20 years, and they used to hold an event on the island. I had a couple of good friends here, and they're like just kept visiting. And it's just, it was so dreamy. It reminded me of small towns in Montana. But the queer part of it, the safety part of it, the little farms, the organic farms. It's like rural town with big city benefits. And so I tried it out and coming up on 17 years being here.
Wow.
17 years. So yeah. Stay you did.
Stay indeed.
Yes, you did. You did. Yeah.
So Jennifer, I mean, it's an amazing story and an amazing transitions. But when you got here and coming here, I mean, how has your sort of life experience shaped your art? How do you express your experiences in your art and in which various mediums of art?
Thanks for the question, Bruce. Yeah. So as I mentioned, my folks had an antique mall, and that's where I got my start with doing assemblage work. Big fan of Robert Rauschenberg, Joseph Cornell, Jasper Johns, those guys. And so with a huge antique mall like that, we had a lot of leftovers. And you know how you see those things of like, oh, this is so beautiful and it's been cherished and what would we do with it? And I wanted to find what to do with it. So old encyclopedia sets, loved it, little old tools, things like that. So I did a huge series. Most of my big art that I did in Montana was based on what I found in the back in the scraps at estate sales, at Dad's Antique Mall. When I came here and I started looking around at all the beach trash, again, objects that have stories that have human use. And I really wanted to create a series of work that was about the stories behind those objects, not about shaking my finger at people like, look what you did to your mom. Like, I just like, okay, everybody's already doing that. And it's a bit tedious. And I don't find shame as an effective method for, you know, creating new behavior. So I wanted to celebrate, like, look, we've been lucky enough to live this way. Some of us didn't realize what we've been doing to the planet. We still have a rich history, and here's where we're at. And I think that acceptance and grace is more conducive towards change than shaking your finger at people. And so that's been a really great thing to integrate with my artwork. The other thing that I've really gotten to play with here is this flower of life pattern that I've played with since I was a kid. It's a sacred geometry pattern, a series of circles that interlock. And I recently did a series, well, not recently, it's 2019, I did a series of watercolors. And I can draw photoreal, I can paint photoreal. I find it just really boring. I'm interested more in working with objects or things that are bigger than myself. And so I did a series of watercolors on these old atlas pages, Bremerton atlas pages. And so when I laid down that flower of life pattern, then I could see an animal inside the shapes. And it was super fun because it was like a little game. Instead of like, oh, I'm going to sit down and draw something. I was like, no, I had to use this meditation pattern to find the animal in the coming out of the paper, coming out of the pattern. So those are some arty things that I've done. And it's been fun to play with the beach trash since moving here. I like that.
Yeah. And that flower of life pattern is a perfect segue to our next question.
Well, I have, first of all, I have to tell you that I did go on the website and look at some of your beach art, I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And it's really, really intriguing.
I
was very impressed. I thought, you know, can take something that somebody has discarded and make something really cool out of it is really an amazing thing. And now, but the question I have is, I'm not aware of, do you have done something with the food bank with around COVID?
I did, yeah. Thanks for asking. That was, I've never done public art before. When COVID hit, the food bank's home delivery distribution system, their clientele increased by 600%.
Wow.
And I, amongst many others, you know, with the loss of work and a huge shift, found ourselves standing in that little parking lot, mm-hmm. not knowing what to do with ourselves. Our lives had been torn apart. We were just trying to get what we needed and the heartbreak that was there. And so I just had this, like, honestly, when COVID hit, I was so beside myself of what was happening to myself and everyone around me. I wanted to start painting that flower of life pattern, starting in Burton and working my way down the highway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just because I wanted to lay down some kind of hope, some kind of prayer. But what I wound up doing with the food bank parking lot, and it was tricky because I had to keep going back to reapply it, but I painted that pattern in 12-foot circles.
Oh.
So that there would be an intersection at every 6 feet so people knew where to stand safely.
Awesome.
So I wanted to lay down a prayer for them. I wanted to give them a guide for where they could stand to be safe. And it was fabulous. People loved it. It was successful. I just kept going back and painting it over and over again because the gravel would shift and... Yeah.
And you actually painted it? What? I didn't see it.
So. I did. So what I do is I've got a buddy that'll hold a large stick
yeah.
and I got a big piece of rope
oh, yeah.
and measured it out at 12 feet.
Oh,
and then I've got one of those inverted spray markers.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
That, so I just walk along and do the circles and
oh.
get them. It's kind of tricky to line it up because the pattern can stray after a while, but
yeah.
it's pretty effective.
Oh, that's great.
It lays it down nice. Yeah.
It's like a big spirograph.
Yeah, no, I got
exactly.
it. I got it.
Yeah.
I figured it out from that.
Yeah.
So, and what is it about First Friday? You have something going there?
Oh, well, the lovely Miss Amy Dreyer gave me the opportunity. So I noticed on Facebook, she said that the Chamber of Commerce at the time last summer was going to shut down the roads.
Right.
And
And
I was like, here's my chance.
That was you?
Yeah.
I didn't
I was
know
me.
That.
And
I
that's the pattern.
That. Oh, my
yeah.
gosh. I
so
did not know
So here
that.
Was my chance to satisfy mm-hmm. my initial urge to paint that pattern from Burton all the way down the highway
yeah.
to lay down that prayer and to
darn.
Celebrate that we came out of it and we've all been changed by this mm-hmm. and we've all discovered new things about ourselves. Some things we didn't need got kind of taken away with COVID. And so... that first initial prayer in the main intersection of town was about all of the transformations that we've been through. Some of us are still trying to bring those into manifestation, mm-hmm. to lend energy to that so that we can recover from everything that's happened and to embrace the changes that have come up for us. And
fantastic.
It was a fabulous opportunity. And so we did that every night last summer.
Yeah.
one in front of the pharmacy that was specifically about physically healing. Just, yeah, it was a great opportunity, and Amy was
so
key.
Delighted to know. Because I saw that and I thought, wow, this is really cool. But what is it? Yeah. You know, who did that? What is?
Well, and so it wasn't just me too. I have to say, I've got an amazing circle of folks that come and help me lay that down. Yeah. It's, I mean, we call in the directions, we lay it down. We're pretty serious
with it.
So, and there's more to come. So keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah. Can you talk about Friday? Because the streets will be closing this Friday, and there's hoopla coming.
Happening. So I'm super excited. This is the first time that someone specifically requested for me to do this. And so I'm going to be, Dove is sponsoring the Pride Dance for First Friday, and they're going to hold the dance in the street. And I'm going to be basically painting the dance floor.
Yay!
And I'm so tickled pink. I can't wait to lay that down for diversity and for room for everybody and for people to dance on that pattern. Yeah, I'm tickled pink by this. Yeah.
Cool. Great. You know, my wife's a quilter, and you know, to see the designs and things come together is totally in the groove with how that works. That's really, really awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, Jennifer, I did want to pivot a little bit to talk about Pride and basically other in the queer community here on Vashon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm really curious if you could talk about where and when you really felt like most affirmed in who you are, and where all of the elements that you bring were really acknowledged and celebrated.
Thank you.
And by the way, I'd like to sneak in another question after that.
Yeah, go. Just, go. Just in case. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Let's go. So when I was in Montana, I'll just give you a little stories. I was a late bloomer, realizing who I was as well. And I had my first job working in a women's clothing store on the plus side. And there were these gentlemen that would come in and check out the dresses every once in a while. And I didn't really know what a drag queen was at this time. And so great guys, great sense of humor. They were fun. And I finally found out what a drag queen was. And I talked to my manager, and we started shutting down the dressing rooms one Tuesday every month so that they could come in and check out the dresses, try them on. And I hooked them up with a girl down the way in the mall to get their shoes. And so they were so much fun. And we started becoming friends. And there was this little tiny cowboy bar just on the edge of town that the queers had taken over. And so I was driving a little 1972 Volkswagen van at the time. And so I would go around and pick the ladies up, and there would be a cloud of pot smoke rolling out of the windows as we're going down this little two-lane highway. And I'd pull over in the parking lot, and they would tiptoe across the gravel in their high heels, and they'd throw open the back door and feed me double bourbons all night.
Awesome.
So I like to joke that I was raised by wild drag queens, and that was my introduction to the queer community. Now, the folks at the bar didn't quite know what to do with me. I didn't quite know what to do with them. I don't like sports. I don't watch football. I'm not typical. I was wearing big flowered skirts with a Vietnam-era jacket, and they were like, who's this kid? And I'm like, I just want to dance. So that was a great way for me to kind of have this little queer shelter for me.
Nice.
And then as I got older, I really wanted to do the beard thing. And so growing my beard in my 20s in Montana, I got really defensive because I got poked at a lot. And when I moved to Portland, this was such a revelation. I was standing in line at a secondhand clothing store, and the young kid behind the counter was checking me out. And he stopped, and he looked up at me, and he said, "And for you today, 50% off."
Oh.
And it was at that moment that I realized that I was at a place where I was not only accepted, but I was celebrated. And that was such a huge shift for me. I didn't realize how much I'd had my shoulders up around me, how spiky I'd gotten. Because, I mean, I get a lot of stuff thrown at me, and it's kind of rough. So to have that revelation, to get to relax, and now being here, like, it's just we're in such an amazing bubble. Safe, rural, queer space. And yeah, it's just amazing. When anymore, I've had the experience when I go to Tacoma for a doctor's appointment, I forget that I look different, and I'll be on the ferry going home, and I'm like, oh, that's why they were looking at me. Shit, right? Okay, like I just forget that I look different. Yes.
Well, actually, my second question is very much related to what you just said.
Great.
So you've been here for 17 years.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about what your experience about the evolution of Vashon Pride since you've been associated with Vashon.
Gosh, I'm still kind of on the, I'm on the edge of the, I mean, I did my time in Montana organizing Pride, Pride events. So we didn't have enough folks to be able to throw our own Pride event in any given city in Montana. We had to rotate cities. And we'd be lucky if we got about 300 people.
A traveling pride.
It was a traveling pride,
in
yeah. Yeah.
That
it
sounds pretty
it
awesome.
It was pretty
actually.
Awesome, yeah.
Smoke coming out of the back
Well, and so, and I took that Volkswagen van out to those prides, and I had a little cutout combat boot that I would stick on top, and I called her Ursula, Queen of the Mountains. Yes. It was pretty fabulous. Yeah, it was pretty fabulous. Cool. The amazing thing here for me, in experiencing queer community, like when I first started cleaning houses here, and I would clean for a lesbian couple who had been together for more than 20 years, owned their own home, and had kids. Mm-hmm. And to come face to face, like to get to actually experience homes like that, I would go home and sit in my driveway and just cry to see that that was possible, that I was witnessing that. And the ease that the queer community has here with their visibility and just having their homes and just having their lives. And watching the new generation starting to come up and change the picture of that is like super exciting.
Well, I appreciate your perspective, because in the some of the outreach we've done with our equity committee is to talk to a number of people who've been associated with Vashon Pride. And it was sort of a little discouraging, just like, oh, well, we're not really all that organized right now. And I said, well, is that a good or a bad thing?
I think it's an evolution that
I think points to acceptance. And so in that sense, it was deemed a good thing.
Yeah, we still get together and party, but we don't have to be so organized with our fists out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up a little bit on Kevin's questions as well, Jennifer. This is maybe a little more philosophical look or 40,000 foot look at your experience. Can you tell us how the queer community has changed in your lifetime? You've talked about geographically the experiences you've had. What about in a temporal setting that you've experienced or you've witnessed? Thoughts on that?
I love this, the next generation of queer kids coming out. They're blowing my mind.
And why is that? How is that?
You know, we've seen a vacillation of, you know, labels and defining ourselves and then abandoning those labels. The acceptance that they get to move through the world of themselves and the empowerment that they have around being whatever they need to be and finding solidarity with each other in that is so remarkable to me. I can't even fathom having that as a kid. Mm-hmm. And getting to see them move with that much freedom in the world is so exciting to me. This next generation right now is just, and they're not, you know, grouped up with themselves. Like, oh, we're just, we're doing this for ourselves. They're like, no, we're here and we're part of an awareness of a bigger community picture for them. Like reaching out for history, reaching out for different experiences and older folks and wanting to hear stories that I love. There's an appreciation.
You reference the term older, and I hopefully don't take this the wrong way, but you might be considered a queer elder now.
Yeah.
You think of yourself at all that way?
I didn't.
This was
another light bulb moment for me. So I was 53. I'm 54 now. I was 53. I was working at Granny's for a little bit, and there was a young person working there who called me their queer elder, and I was like,
"Wait a minute!
Wait a minute!" And you know, I think elder, I've been there. I've done that. I've got some stories. I've done some activism. I've lived through some oppression. I've gotten to live an extraordinary life. I think the best thing I have to offer as an elder is stories about what not to do as much as anything. But I think people getting to hear stories about how it was for folks, and Montana's pretty far behind the times, unfortunately. It's got its pockets, I have to admit. It has its pockets. But yeah, there's value in that. I think that I can at least tell stories, and I may not be so great for like boots on the ground anymore, but I'm really great for like go get 'em. I'll have the bone broth soup waiting for you when you get home, and I'll rub your feet. Kind of action is more where I'm at, so I guess that puts me in elder status.
Well, you can give people perspective too, can't you?
Yeah,
and you it seems that you would be a great mentor.
I can, yeah. And I mean, I kind of consider myself a walking installation piece as it is. I mean, I'm walking down the street with a beard on. My hope is always that, I'm making people ask questions. I'm hoping that young people will see me and go, oh my gosh, maybe there's room for me in this world too. I mean, when I was here in my early years on VAT, and I miss this happening, I don't know what's shifted, but I used to hear that little tiny voice all the time in the grocery store. Mom, is that a boy or a girl? And I was always hear the parental voice come back. Well, why don't you go ask them? And I will get on my knees for any kid with that question. Mm. I want them to get to see that there is room for undefinable existence and however they want to be.
Well, you have been recognized and respected.
Celebrated for their work.
Celebrated.
That's right. And for the work that you do, especially the work you do that we see on Facebook when the snow is coming down.
1,500 followers like to listen to me prattle on. Can you believe
it? Oh, yeah, but it's so awesome. It's
Thank you.
No, it really is. That's great. And it's important information besides being entertaining, you know? Come on.
Yeah, thank you.
So if I could follow up with that theme,
you've
talked about, you know, what has been and what is bringing us to now.
Yeah.
What's your expectation for the future? Are there challenges we're facing? Is there enough in our country, in our culture, enough support and awareness and recognition that you are hopeful and excited about the fact that this freedom that you described is really there for all of us? Are there challenges that we should be aware of to address as we go forward? Just curious if that sparks any thoughts.
That's a big question.
I know. I'm known for asking those kind of questions.
I'm not sure I've had enough coffee for these brain cells to kick on that.
Sorry, my apologies.
No, that's all right. Let me take a deep breath on that one. I mean, there is so much changing. I think I'm seeing folks, I'm seeing so much willingness from folks to want to understand what's happening for individuals, wanting to understand the movement, wanting to understand, you know, how people are claiming their voices and wanting to be supportive, wanting to be allies, which I think is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the big, beautiful change that's important for me there is when you start to engage in a path on being an ally, you get to confront a lot of your own stuff. Mm-hmm. You get to understand yourself and how you've operated through the world in privilege. Or maybe even come to understand your resistance to supporting someone else might reflect some things that you didn't get for yourself. Hmm. And so the opportunity for healing across the board to provide support and to internalize your own healing through desire to be an allyship is the biggest thing that I see happening that's exciting to me. My own studies, like a 2-year commitment to a book on white privilege with a book group, really changed my life. Mm-hmm. I think anybody stepping into allyship is going to find their world's going to open up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. And, you know, sort of it is interesting to, you know, move through the world in our bodies that are not as conforming. And, you know, I kind of have made a real commitment to no longer responding to sir, even when it is absolutely clear, you know, even as I fly through SeaTac Airport, you know, always if there's not a line and I walk in, or if there is a line and I'm the last, you know, person in line, the women who come through will always look around a little bit. Right before it be like, what are like to make sure, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, moving into something and calling it the Bearded Lady Road Report, right? Like, sort of embracing that. And, you know, was that where did that come from? And I don't want to lead the question on a little bit too much, but, you know, when you were conceiving the Bearded Lady Road Report, where did you get that name? Why did you choose to name it that way? You know, like what happened there?
Well, its predecessor was Bearded Lady House Cleaning. And so I'm an Aries for whatever, that's an excuse, but yeah, hey, so there's a little bit of a rebel there. And finding that I was so accepted here, finding that I could move through the waters as easily as I could, I always like, okay, I'm going to take more. I'm going to have an LLC named Bearded Lady, whatever, and I'm going to walk into people's homes announcing myself in that way. And if you can take that, then those are the clients I want to work for, right? So it was kind of like a, let's find out. And so in 2019, when we had that big snowmageddon, I was getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go pick up my crew, driving to the jobs. I was also taking people to the pharmacy, grocery store. And so I was up and I was like, let's screw around and find out. So I just started live broadcasting and taking videos and throwing in driving tips. And it just kind of developed into my little routine of like, it's tricky driving through the snow. I got caught up short when I first moved here because I was like, oh, I can drive around in the snow. And I had my little suit.
You're from Montana. Come
yeah,
on.
Right. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I literally got my driver's license in a blizzard. So I wanted to try it. The snow here is so different. It's very different from Montana.
Oh, yeah.
And the texture of it. And so learning to drive in that, passing on the tips. I love being able to give back to this community. I always loved, my mother always said that I had a servant's heart. and that's very true. I love to be helpful. I love to be there for people when I can, sometimes to a fault. But yeah, Bearded Lady Road Report, it was great. Like, people were listening. It was helpful. So I was like, okay, I'll do it some more. And then I started having some big adventures with it. And it's been fun. I love that people love it so much. So mm-hmm. Yeah, and they bought the T-shirts. So that's
even better.
Yeah, even better. It was great.
And, you know, Bruce, question for you. To your knowledge, has there ever been, either on Voice of Vashon or other media, sort of a road report on Vashon?
Not that I'm aware of. Well, Truman, you
the
might
only,
know.
The only yeah. thing that we right. have is the emergency alert service.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We do have that.
Yeah,
and that's,
exactly.
But that's, you know, that's only for the big things, you know, like the tree across the road right. or power yeah. lines down yeah. or, you know. But just a regular road yeah. report, I'm not aware of.
And that's a very sort of official governmental King County roads kind of thing, yeah. where it's very personal. You know, this is you driving down a road with your phone holding up, showing videos. I mean, that's a different level of sort of yeah. empathy and contact with the community yeah. that, you know, an emergency report just doesn't have.
Doesn't cut it.
You know, it's very powerful.
Yeah. And I have to brag too. I ran into some King County road crew when Quartermaster had those high king tides last year, and they were clearing the road, and they're like, "Oh my God, your Bearded Lady Road Report." And I found out King County follows me.
Hey!
I'm that cool. King County follows me to see where they need to send the snowplow.
Oh, I love it.
Tires on the ground dash
yeah,
on
let's
Moore
go.
Island.
Amazing.
Let's go.
Amazing. Pioneer. Yeah. Yeah. Vashon, an original Vashon pioneer. Although that's probably not the right word to use anymore.
Yeah.
Hey. Innovative. I had a question, sort of. You know, we at the museum, we did an exhibit called In and Out,
yeah.
And it was a great exhibit. But it's also, it was very much an exhibit about the past on Vashon Island. And I just wondered, you know, what do you see going on? And we've touched on it, but I really want to see what you think about, I mean, in the 80s and 90s when the queer community first came to Vashon, and it was very bifurcated between the lesbians and the gay man, and of course AIDS pulled them together in many ways. You know, but by the 2010s, what you described in your sort of housekeeping, going in and here are gay and lesbian couples leading normal lives, owning houses, that kind of thing. I mean, that's a big change.
Huge.
But how are the young folks on Vashon? How are the folks who are sort of questioning, who are trans, who don't see a place and don't identify with that 40 and 50 and 60-year-old and older, you know, sort of lesbian and gay community? Where do they go?
I'm super on the edge for that answering that question. That'd be a great question for them.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, you know, just orbit, right, at O-Space. Colin at Orbit is really doing an amazing job, and I know they are getting a lot of visitorship at Orbit at O-Space, and there is the Queer Alliance, and it might not be the Queer Alliance, but at McMurray, they have a really robust program at McMurray that is very much encompasses. I went last year. Was it last year? They did the they did like a teaming us up with youth. They did a midday workshop, and they created that quilt. And I think Colin drove it, and I know Tara was involved a lot. But a lot of quote unquote queer elders.
Yep.
Right. Kind of working with the kids, but. My experience has been that, you know, the school system is transformed in the way that, that it works. And that is not to say that that is creates a safe space or is the right space or meets everyone's needs. But I've seen that available. And I know the Orbit program is going going very strong for sure. I've seen that happen here on the island. But, you know, kids these days, they have what we never had, for better or worse, which is the internet. Right. And I think there's discussion there for better or worse. And, you know, kind of watching middle schoolers grapple with questions of identity that, you know, we weren't even trying to grapple with until our, you know, 20s, probably, if at all. And just, you know, kind of concepts of identity that I still wonder about. You know, here I am, late 40s, kind of like really struggling with these high-minded concepts of identity, you know, and watching middle schoolers try to grapple with that in the midst of, you know, everything else that happens to you in middle school is crazy.
But it's so exciting, too. And new definitions of neurodiversity coupled with identity. Like, so many big questions about who am I walking on this planet that benefits so many people and the people around them. I mean, it's just super exciting. I just can't wait to watch more of it. Just, and I mean, they're here. They're, you know, waiting on you in the restaurants. They're making your burger. There's, you know, they're all here. They're around. And I just, I love seeing some of the Hydra. I mean, just alone, the revival of the 80s gear alone makes me so happy that Benetton is hip again. Just is like, oh my God, I'm having a flashback. That's so good.
One of the gay men I worked with when I was at the center in Denver told me that if you have worn a fashion once in your life, you cannot wear it when it comes back around.
I call malarkey on that.
I mean, it's, I don't know.
I call malarkey on that.
You haven't lived long enough.
I don't know. I see some stuff that I'm like, well, my hairdo right now is I rock this.
Yeah, you do.
Like back in the day, I definitely had like mullet, rat tail, like full on middle school.
You still 80s. Got it.
Yeah. And it feels a little bit like I'm back home.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I will let Tony know that his rule was a little restrictive.
I'm going to go to Sarah St. Germain and talk about a frost job. I think that'd be super fun.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I talked about going like full skunk, you know, bonding it out.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Oh my God. Well, we're going to have a GoFundMe for that.
Yeah.
That'll be good. That'll be good. We'll do it live, maybe. Yeah. Like,
I think if you did that, people wouldn't think of full skunk. They'd think of full honey badger.
Yes! now it has to happen. Yeah. Now, I mean, now we're done. The die is cast. All right. So I want to make sure before we go that folks know where they can find Bearded Lady Road Report and where they can see your art.
Oh, thank you. Bearded Lady Road Report's on Facebook. Pretty easy to find. Just punch it in. And then my artwork, super exciting. I've participated in the last two studio tours, and will be doing so again in December with my good friends. My studio is located in the Beale Greenhouses. It's a really interesting space that took me 3 years to develop. Super fun to have people that everybody walks in, and it's part antique store, part apothecary, part studio. So yeah, that's the place to find me.
And are you, like, have you reclaimed a Beale greenhouse or two to do that, or is it some...
I reclaimed a space for sure. It was formerly two walk-in coolers where they had the green, they had orchids, but it was floor-to-ceiling trash. The ceilings were caving in. I had to do a complete remodel on it with a lot of help from my friends, and it turned into a pretty fabulous space.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I had a question about your little furry friend that I see all the time on Facebook. Tell us about him or her. I'm not sure which gender she is.
So, Mitzi.
Mitzi, okay.
Pronouns are debatable at this point. Yes, she's pretty
that's,
push.
That's a good thing.
So, I mean, she's a terrier. So, I live on a farm where Mitzi was born, and her mom, Pickles, is an extraordinary personality. And my landlord and her boyfriend decided to breed Pickles with a full-blooded fox terrier named Caesar. And little Pickles had 8 puppies. We don't know how she packed them all in there. And when they came out, they were all so different. Mitzi's bigger than her mom. And so they sold 5 of the puppies. They kept 3, and we had this little pack going on. And so Mitzi quickly became really big and was dominating, started to have some behavioral issues. And so the landlord came to me one day and said, look, she's too smart. I don't have time to train her. She's hanging around you a lot. I mean, the whole pack's in and out of my apartment all the time. Do you want to take her? And I love dogs. I've never had my own dog before. And so I took 2 weeks to think about it, and this little girl has changed my life. She's so much fun, and we continue to grow together. She's just, yeah, she's smarter than me, which is a real issue, but I'm working on it. She's way smarter than me. She's getting used to being in the car. I'd love to have her be a bearded lady road mascot, but I'm also here to discover the personality of this little animal and let her be her best self. So, yeah, that's Mitzi.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, just another question. I live at KVI Beach, so I walk that beach all the time. And I just love what you discover at KVI and the other beaches you walk around. And so talk a little bit about that. I mean, what is the beach to you from Montana?
It just blew my mind. I mean, we used to take family vacations to the Oregon coast, and Dad and I would always go swim in that cold water. I'm a polar bear at heart. It's been so amazing to live here and walking on that beach. And I mean, where I grew up, it was high desert. And so there's juniper trees. It might look like not much is living there. But walking on that beach, and every single step is living between the barnacles and the crabs and just that salt water. It's just a completely different environment, and so amazing just to walk on. And the little synapses of detail. I mean, in the same way about flowers in my garden, too, just going and catching that little minuscule presence, that little gem, and getting to share that with people. I mean, that's why I love social media. Some people are like, oh, it's, you know, I know we all have mixed feelings about social media, but my goal is to, like, share little tidbits of my life and bring that brightness out and to stand as myself again with the door of, like, here I am living this weird little life. You can too. Stop and smell the flowers. All of that. But yeah, those walks on the beach, I'll never stop being fascinated by it. The way that certain woods wear down, the shells that I find, I've learned recently, did you know that we have 2 different kinds of moon snails? The definition of which is defined by the size of the aperture. I can't stop learning about this stuff. It's so much fun. Yeah.
Another kind of follow-up question. This was 3 or 4 years ago, I had the opportunity to walk through the Beale greenhouses with 2 guys sort of my age who worked there as teenagers in high school. And we walked back into where the old boiler room is.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just, it's like an alien landscape. I mean, that moss must be 4 or 5 foot thick. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
What kind of inspiration do you get from being in that environment? Because it's kind of like it's like a ghost.
Yeah. And it's not. It's still so alive, right? I mean, I'm a junkie for industrial wastelands. There was an old brick factory in Montana that my friends and I would go hang out, and just watching, you know, getting to like look into the buildings and seeing the craftsmanship and the care of that time, but also getting to see the way that it breaks down and what it's being replaced with. The greenhouses, you know, those little stick frames still standing, but covered with all the alders and the blackberries and everything still being reclaimed slowly, all that cement and glass and steel and wood just still being broken down, that impermanence. It's just beautiful. Yeah, I love walking around that place.
You know that the glass, a lot of the glass in that were glass slides. I mean, glass negatives.
Really?
Are you aware of that? Yeah. If you look, I'm not sure that any of them are still in existence, but they took the glass negatives that were made, you know, with the big box cameras.
Yeah.
And they used part of that glass in the glass for that.
Interesting.
So pretty interesting if you look for that.
There's little stacks of material shot around the property, and I always like to sniff that out. And I think there's a stack of that glass. I'm going to go look at that
take
again.
Take a look.
Yeah.
Wow. And where did that glass come from? Why was there a cache of that?
Well, Bruce, you may know that.
Yeah, actually, there were a number of photo studios in Seattle, you know, 1890s, early 1900s into the 1920s, before film cameras really came popular and really available, all used glass slides. Mm-hmm. And when a photographic studio would close, there'd be boxes and boxes of glass slides. Nobody wanted them. I mean, now, as a historian, it's sort of like, oh, God, what I would give for a box of glass slides. Yeah. But nobody wanted them. And they were just, they were industrial waste. And mm-hmm. so they were just repurposed.
Yeah. Love that.
Fascinating. Yeah. And so one more time, remind us about what's happening on Friday and how we can see your art on Friday.
Come on down. I think the streets close at 6. We're going to start painting right away. And then the crew to set up the dance floor for the Pride Dance is going to be right there. They're going to have DJ, stereo setup. It's going to be super fun. So, yeah, I will start painting probably shortly after 6 o'clock p.m. with my crew. And I will be handing out sidewalk chalk as usual so folks can color it in. And it's going to be right on the street front part of the Vashon Theater. Cool. And, yeah, come dance. Come join in. Grab some sidewalk chalk. Grab your partner.
Excellent. All are welcome. The Pride Street Dance. All right. So just want to check in real quick as we close out here. We did have a big event last week again with that Thursday. And we do have the Legalista here. So, wanted to just take one moment as we're closing out here, and I think maybe what happened has been rehashed, but just kind of, Craig, what's next? Like, what actually does happen next? I know there's sentencing coming up. What could happen next?
Well, yeah, there's sentencing scheduled for July 11th, which is the date that Trump's counsel actually requested, and now you're hearing all this about the judge imposed a sentencing date on us early, you know, even though that was the date that his own counsel had asked for. That'll be coming up. It could be delayed a little while because of some motion, basically to throw out the jury's verdict, which has no chance of prevailing. But within 30 days of that verdict that was entered last week, they have to file a notice of appeal. They don't make their arguments. They just file the notice of appeal. And they will then have a couple of months probably to submit their briefs to the Court of Appeals, which, as you know, or probably know, is a court of all black women.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
All right. The question is, do they have to cite some issue with the previous trial?
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to focus right in on what your argument. The Courts of Appeal recognize that you're not in the courtroom. You don't get a feel for the evidence. They're not going to weigh the evidence. People think that a Court of Appeal just retries it again. No, it's specific. And typically it's like, this evidence was excluded, like the expert, supposedly, the election expert. Trump keeps talking about how I couldn't get my election. He wouldn't allow my election expert in. Well, that's not true. The judge said your election expert could be there. But they couldn't testify as to whether or not you were guilty or innocent. Just like any expert in any trial is not permitted to testify on the ultimate issue that's before the jury. But they'll make that argument. They'll make some other arguments. They'll argue about some instructions that they think weren't worded quite right, even though the instructions are basically pattern jury instructions that come out of a book that's been around for a long time.
And if the appeal upholds the current decision, is that appealable?
It can go to the highest court.
What basis is that?
It can go to the highest court. It can make an effort to go to the highest court in New York, which is the trial court's called the Supreme Court. Almost okay. Everywhere else, the highest court in the state is called the Supreme Court.
And this is the initiative
state,
of the
state.
Correct.
This is the initiative of the defendant. At some point, the defendant has to give up. Is that?
Well, yeah, the prosecutor doesn't have the right to appeal.
Right.
And so it'll
go on as long as there's ambition.
Right, and then there's this theory that that people will be coming, you know, the Supreme Court will be coming, the United States Supreme Court, the federal Supreme Court will be coming to the aid, which would be the most extraordinary thing that's ever happened in, you know, judicial circles.
Stay tuned. I think the extraordinary is our timeline these days, right? Yeah. All right. So we are at time, and I'm going to go ahead and on behalf of Jennifer Hawk, Bruce, Kevin, Craig, and Truman, thank you for tuning into The Brown Briefly. It is hosted weekly at 11 a.m. on Tuesdays, right here on your very own Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, and online at voiceofvashon.org.
See you all next week.
Thanks, you guys.